Welcome to The Reference Desk, a podcast where two librarians take you down the rabbit hole of the topics that have bewitched us.
So adjust the chain on your reading glasses, button up your favorite cardigan, and follow us punk-ass book jockeys through the stacks to The Reference Desk.
Hello, I'm Haley.
Hi, I'm Katie.
And you are listening to The Reference Desk. Thanks for joining us tonight. Or whenever you're listening, I guess. It's tonight for us.
It is tonight for us. We are super, super excited. We have so many new Patreon supporters.
This is, oh my gosh, phenomenal. Y'all are the best.
Yes. Oh, so exciting. So we want to give a big thank you to Ashley, Elaine, Mary Kate, Cricket, and Michelle. Thank you so much for supporting us.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. This is, I can't believe people are actually really listening and like supporting
us. I know, right?
Phenomenal.
This thing that we started like basically just as a way to make sure we talk to each other during COVID.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so thank you so much to all of our new patrons. And if you would like to join us and watch our video recordings, and sometimes we even do like extra bonus recordings for our patrons, or we can send you a recommended reading list. Mm-hmm. Just if you're interested.
Or if not, just hang out
with
us.
That's fine. That's totally cool too. Yeah.
We love you all.
Uh-huh.
We don't have any favorite children. No. Oh my gosh. Okay, so I have a quick story before we start.
Okay.
So for Christmas, Dave got me the coolest gift. I have always wanted to learn how to fly. And he got me like an introductory lesson at a flight school to learn how to fly an airplane.
Oh my god, Katie!
I'm so excited about.
That is so cool. You can just be your own Frank Abagnale.
Oh my god, I know, right?
That is amazing.
I know. I'm super excited. But I was telling my brother this. We FaceTimed on Christmas Day, and I was telling him about this gift, and he was asking me if I remembered this time when we were growing up. My grandpa took us to like an air show, and he did like volunteer firefighting and EMT, so he knew like a lot of the like the pilots who flew like volunteered. And one of them took us up in their plane. And then before we went home, my brother and I each really, really wanted to go again. Mm-hmm. And my mom apparently told us we could not go together because if something happened, she couldn't bear to lose both of her children.
Oh my God!
So only one of us could go at a time.
Did she choose who could go, or did you do that amongst yourselves?
I don't know, but my brother said that I was the one who went back up.
No! Oh my god. Oh my god. Do you have a staff pick for today? That was the most awkward way to ask you.
I do. So it's kind of it's book related, but okay. So before we move to where we are now, we've moved like 10 billion times, but we were in a little town outside of Grand Rapids, Michigan. And to get to Grand Rapids, we always drove through another little town called Lowell that was, like, our favorite. Like, it was so cute. That was where we really, really wanted to move to, but we couldn't find anything there because the housing market is, you know, just the best.
Yeah.
So, anyways, there is a bookstore there called Betty's Pages.
Oh my
which
gosh.
Is the cutest.
So cute.
And they are just they are very like community centered, and they make it a point to like make sure that they carry like so many like diverse books. They're so inclusive. They're a huge supporter of the Lowell Pride every year. And it's a small woman queer owned business, and they're just phenomenal. They have a TikTok page, channel, what do you call it? What do you kids call those things?
What do you call them, TikToks?
That's really, really good. And last year they started doing a Challenge Your Shelf series.
Ooh.
And they just put out their like theme and their books for this year. So they pick like an overall theme, and then each month is kind of like a little like subsection of that theme.
Yes.
And their theme this year is Reagan Ruins Everything.
Oh my God, amazing.
Just so good. So each month is like, they focus on something that Ronald Reagan effectively ruined for our country.
Which is a lot.
So, like, January's topic is the Confederation of Church and State. So it's all about the rise of Christian nationalism that really, you know, got its boost during Reagan's candidacy and then presidency.
The scariest thing happening right now.
Yeah. So, and they have picks for each month that fit within the theme that go, like, from picture books all the way up through adult. So there's something literally for everyone, and there's always like fiction and nonfiction, a really good mix. So anyways, I highly recommend looking at their challenge for this year if you are interested in maybe finding some new books to read, but that all kind of center around a topic. So if you're interested in that, their website is bettyspages.com. And then they, like I said, they are on TikTok as well.
Amazing. So
that's my pick.
I'm definitely going to check that out.
My pick is not picking books, but using someone else to pick books.
Well, my pick is not book related at all. So
great.
It's a TV show, that we have been watching. My mom actually got us into this TV show.
Ooh.
Mom. Hi, Mom.
What's up, moms?
This is this is the mom episode.
This is the mom episode.
So we have been watching Ghosts on CBS. Have you seen this show?
I saw, like, the whatever, like, the cover art for it. When I was just, like, flipping through looking for something, and I was like, what is this?
Yeah, it's
amazing.
But I
haven't watched it yet.
So I'm almost positive that it is another, like, British transport. Like, so we are now redoing a British show called Ghost. So it's about Samantha, who is this really upbeat journalist, and then her husband, Jay, who is, like, an upcoming chef, and they live in this city. I think it's New York City. Samantha learns that her, like, ancestor has left her this huge mansion after they died. So she never even knew them, but she's now inherited this huge country estate. And they decide to ditch their lives and their job, move to this new mansion, and turn it into a bed and breakfast. But on the first night there, Samantha gets into an accident and dies for like 3 minutes.
Okay.
And so now, because of that, she can see ghosts. And so there's all of these different ghosts living in this estate from all different eras. There's like a Viking. There's a Native American who lived on the land, you know. There's someone from the Revolutionary War. There's an 80s Boy Scout troop leader. There's just this whole host of all of these ghosts. They're phenomenal. And there's even like a whole group of ghosts who live in the basement who like all died of cholera. It was like a cholera hospital. And so it's, you know, spooky ghosts, but not spooky at all. It's just hilarious because, of course, she's the only one that can see them, and she gets into all these hijinks because of it. It's on the second season right now. It's on CBS. We watch it on Paramount Plus, I think, or Hulu, one of those. It's really good. It's really, really good.
Ooh, just from like the title and like the artwork, I was like, that's probably good.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Very, very, very funny. So we've been very much enjoying that one. We're glad it's back.
Hooray.
Yay. Yeah. Okay. So my episode this week. It's interesting that you mentioned, you know, moving around a bit, because my topic kind of deals with that a little bit. So so let's say, Katie, that you have just closed on your dream house. Okay. It's absolutely perfect. It's this beautiful house in this beautiful neighborhood. But 3 days after closing, before you've even moved into this home, you find a letter in your mailbox. And this letter reads, "Dear newest neighbor, allow me to welcome you to the neighborhood. How did you end up here? Did the home call to you with its force within? The home has been the subject of my family for decades now, and as it approaches its 110th birthday, I have been put in charge of watching and waiting for its second coming. My grandfather watched the house in the 20s, and my father watched in the 60s. It is now my time. Do you know the history of the house? Do you know what lies within the walls of this address? Why are you here? I will find out." And it's signed. Yes. So, and they signed it, the letter, The Watcher. So what would you do?
I would not close on the house. I would say, "You can have all of the escrow money. I'm done. I'm out. No, thank you. No, thank you."
Yeah. So this is the predicament that the Broaddust family of New Jersey found themselves in. And so that is why this week I am bewitched by The Watcher.
Is this like the Netflix show?
Yes, it is.
So is this what the show was based on?
Roughly based on. I mean, it's Ryan Murphy. It's very fictionalized. Sure. But yes, this is kind of what the show is based on. Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But look at – is that the house?
That's the house.
Oh, well, I understand why it would be hard to walk away from that.
Right?
Oh, my God.
Okay. So the Netflix show was very, very good. Highly recommend. It's a limited series. I think there's like 7 or 8 episodes. What's her face is in it? She's Australian. Naomi Watts. She's in there.
There's a lot of like big names in it.
Yeah, she's in it. Sissy Spacek is in it. Nope, not Sissy Spacek. Mia Farrow. Mia Farrow.
Okay.
Is in it. Yes. And she's very good in it too. Like, she's wonderful in this show.
Okay.
So yeah, it's really, really good. Again, very fictionalized from the real story. But they have to. It's TV.
Sure.
Yeah. So highly recommend that. But you know, after I watched that, I had kind of heard of the true story before a little bit, but I didn't know, you know, all of the details. So of course I had to do my normal lock myself in a room and look at nothing but this forever. So there's actually not a ton of information on this case, especially prior to the Netflix show. The main information comes from one very, very informative piece on The Cut, which is, I think, part of New York Magazine.
Okay.
So I got the majority of my information from this article. It's currently free right now, as we're recording this, but you know, at some point I'm sure it's going to be behind a paywall. So just as a warning. All right. So it starts with the Broaddust family. So Derek Roland Broaddust married Maria Joy Santamuro on June 30th, 2001. And the couple had 3 children. Here is the Broaddust family. If you're viewing along with us, children blurred out, of course. Yeah, just a happy family.
Mm-hmm.
So Derek was from a working class family in Maine, and then he eventually worked his way up the corporate ladder at an insurance firm in Manhattan to become a senior vice president. Maria was raised in the town of Westfield, New Jersey, which was a very wealthy town just 16 miles southwest of New York City. In 2018, Bloomberg listed Westfield as the 99th highest income place in the United States. Ooh. And the 18th in New Jersey, with a median household income of just under $160,000. Okay. Which, yeah, and that's more than double the statewide median income. So,
wow,
very wealthy neighborhood mm-hmm. or town. According to The Cut, which had the, you know, the article that I'm getting my information from, most Westfield residents viewed the town as like Mayberry. It's this idyllic town, you know, nothing bad ever happens. It's just, it's 45 minutes from New York and it's just really, really slow. It's too slow for all the singles. So the town's roughly 30,000 residents is just mostly well-to-do families. Mm-hmm. At the time of the incident we're going to talk about, it was ranked as the 30th safest neighborhood in America.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a good place to want to raise your kids.
Yeah. It's one of those places where, like, no one locks their doors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Apparently, the biggest issue the town had been experiencing around this time was the temporary closure of Trader Joe's due to a roof collapse. Like, that's what everyone was mad about.
Oh, no. But where are they going to get their $2 chuck?
Damn it. Claire Trapazzo of Realtor.com describes Westfield as, quote, a town of grand restored Victorians and stately mansions perched on tree-lined streets. The downtown features mom-and-pop shops and bakeries alongside shops like Williams-Sonoma and Baby Gap. Even before COVID-19, busy roads were often closed off to residents so they could listen to live music while dining outdoors, participate in children's arts and craft projects, or take open-air yoga classes. Ooh. Yes, many who grew up in the affluent suburb about an hour west of Manhattan return after college to raise their families there. So, like, buying a home in this area was kind of fulfilling a dream for the Broaddus's. And it was certainly no easy feat to purchase a home in this area, if you can imagine. According to one local resident, quote, there's a lot of money and a lot of ego. I've seen bidding wars where friends lost by $300,000.
Jesus.
Which is like more than my house.
Oh, so. My God. I can't yeah. imagine.
Yeah. So the Broaddus family purchased the home at 657 Boulevard, which is, it's just 657 Boulevard.
Boulevard. Like, that's,
it is the Boulevard.
Like, okay.
And they purchased
Disney
the home.
World.
Right. They purchased their home for $1.3 million.
Hmm.
Here it is. Yeah, so there's the front of it.
Ooh.
Yes.
It's lovely.
It really is. Mm-hmm. It's like a Dutch colonial, so it's got lots of architectural details. So the boulevard is a wide tree-lined street with some of the more coveted homes in the neighborhood. And 657 Boulevard was possibly the most opulent house on the block. It was built in 1905. And it currently lists as having 6 bedrooms and 4 baths.
Is that 3 chimneys?
It looks like it. Yes, 3 chimneys. Okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, yeah, lots of fireplaces.
Mm-hmm.
The Broaddus family had purchased the home from John and Andrea Woods. And the Woods had never even had to put a for sale sign in their yard and had multiple offers over asking price. The real estate market was just booming. So the Broaddus family was able to secure the home above asking price, of course, after one buyer backed out due to a bad medical diagnosis, and then another because they found a different home. Mm. After closing on the house, the Broaddus family started renovations right away. So they were not moving in right away, but they immediately started renovations. One night in June, Derek was at home doing some painting, helping along with the renovations. When he was finished for the night, he went out to check the mail before leaving. They hadn't, you know, received much mail yet because they had just, you know, closed on the house. But in this batch of mail, he found a white card-shaped envelope addressed to the new owners in thick, chunky letters. This letter is the first of several frightening letters the family would receive.
Nope, I hate it.
Yeah, yeah. So it's essentially most of what I've read before, but I'm just going to read it in full. Dearest new neighbor of 657 Boulevard, allow me to welcome you to the neighborhood. How did you end up here? Did 657 Boulevard call to you with its force within? 657 Boulevard has been the subject of my family for decades now, and as it approaches its 110th birthday, I have been put in charge of watching and waiting for its second coming. My grandfather watched the house in the 1920s, and my father watched in the 1960s. The 1960s were a good time for 657 Boulevard, when I ran from room to room, imagining the life with the rich occupants there. It is now my time. Do you know the history of the house? Do you know what lies within the walls of 657 Boulevard? Why are you here? I will find out. yeah. Oh
my God.
So, I know. And then the letter goes on to describe, like, the family's two vehicles. So they had, like, a Honda minivan and a Mercedes. So he's, like, putting in these details so they know clearly he has definitely been watching them. And then the rest of the letter says, I see already that you have flooded 657 Boulevard with contractors so that you can destroy the house as it was supposed to be. Tisk, tisk, bad move. You don't want to make 657 Boulevard unhappy. You have children. I have seen them. So far, I think there are three that I have counted. Will there be more on the way? I asked the Woodses to bring me young blood, and it looks like they listened.
What the fuck?
Do you need to fill the house with the young blood I requested? Better for me. Was your old house too small for the growing family, or was it greed to bring me your children? Once I know their names, I will call them and draw them to me. Who am I? There are hundreds and hundreds of cars that drive by 657 Boulevard each day. Maybe I am in one. Look at all the windows you can see from 657 Boulevard. Maybe I am in one. Welcome, my friends. Welcome. Let the party begin. The Watcher.
Oh my God.
Ah!
I have goosebumps.
Right? Isn't that so creepy?
No, no, no. Oh.
Like,
hey, okay, well, I am never leaving a single blind open in my home ever again.
I know. Oh my God, it's so creepy. Ugh. So at this point, it's like it's after 10 p.m. Derek is there in the house by himself. So they're remodeling. You know, they haven't moved in yet. They've only brought their children like a few times just to like look at the new house, play with some friends, like kids in the neighborhood. They've only been there a handful of times. And yet this creepo guy, I don't know if it's a guy, knows more about them, right? So Derek is obviously freaked out. Mm-hmm. He said he immediately like turns off all the lights. So like hopefully no one would see and called the police. So apparently a Westfield police officer came to the home, read the letter, and said to Derek, what the fuck is this?
Yes, that's the correct response.
Yeah, yeah. He then, you know, started questioning Derek, asking if he had any enemies, which, you know, I don't know, just like random stuff. What do you do? I don't know.
Yeah.
And then he also offered some advice about moving some of the construction equipment from the porch and locking it in the house so it couldn't be used to like break into windows.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess. But
what was the year?
This was 2014.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. So there was no return address on the envelope. And so there's really like nothing the police can do. Mm-hmm. So after the officer left, Derek raced home to his wife and children, all of whom were under the age of 10. And after showing the letter to Maria, the couple decided to write an email to the former owners, the Woodses, asking if they might have any idea who could have written these letters and if they had ever received any themselves.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Especially because the letter mentioned the Woodses, you know, by name.
Right, right.
So they're thinking, maybe they have an idea. So Andrea Woods responded the next morning saying that she had received a letter from someone calling themselves the Watcher a few days before they moved out. Mm. She said that while it was odd, her letter, just claimed that their family had been observing the house for some time, but there wasn't really anything off-putting like the Broaddus's letter. And so she just tossed it and didn't really think anything of it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
She's clearly way too trusting of a person.
Right?
Oh, I get a phone call from someone I don't know, and I'm like, who is this? How did they get my number? Let me Google it and see if I can figure out where this is coming from.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. So she told them that her family had lived in the home for 23 years. They had never received a letter like that before. But they did, offer to go with Maria to the police station. Hmm. And they met with a detective, Leonard Lugo, who's right here. Nope, that's just a clip from the letter about bringing the young blood into the home. Yeah, I have scoured and scoured and scoured, and I cannot find any pictures of the original letters. I don't think they, are publicly available. But here's Detective Leonard Lugo from the Westfield Police Department. And so his advice was to not – yeah, I like that little kind of like skunky hair thing.
What is happening?
I don't know.
I couldn't tell if it was like a stripe of color or his
– I think it is.
Okay. Like the most extreme – reverse widow's peak of all time. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think it's a stripe of white because in other pictures it looks more like a stripe of white. So I don't
know. Okay, get it, Lugo.
So he said that he's, he's gonna look into it, and his advice was to not show the letter to any of the neighbors because they are now all suspects, right? So with nothing else to do, the Broaddus family just kind of continued on with their lives, though of course they're, on high alert. Derek canceled some upcoming work trips so the family wouldn't be alone. But they hadn't received another letter. And so things were not exactly peaceful at their new home, but they're, still going on. Their general contractor arrived one morning to find a heavy sign that he had hammered into the front yard had been ripped up overnight. And also, when Derek was giving a tour to one of their new neighbors, he claims that she remarked, "It'll be nice to have some young blood in the neighborhood." That's weird.
I don't like that phrasing.
No. And also, I feel like the Broaddus family is like our people because they're going to get to the bottom of this themselves.
Yes.
I love it. I love it.
Why have they not put up all the cameras?
Right? Yeah. All I mean, it's 2014. Them.
Yes.
Yeah. So they're just, continuing on with the contracting? I don't know. Renovations. And then 2 weeks later, another letter comes. Yep. So this time, Maria was the one to find it. And since it was in a similar envelope and had similar handwriting to the other, she called the police before even opening it.
Smart.
Yes. So this time the letter was addressed to Mr. and Mrs. Broaddus, though they spelled their name wrong. So now he knows their name. Do I have a copy of? Yeah. So that's the actual envelope. So the handwriting looks like, I don't know.
Like,
it's very shaky.
It is. That's what I was thinking. Like, is it someone like super old?
It might be. I mean, yeah. So after, you know, handing it over to the police, they opened it, they read it, and this is what the new letter says. Welcome again to your new home at 657 Boulevard. The workers have been busy, and I have been watching you unload carfuls of your personal belongings. The dumpster is a nice touch. Have they found what is in the walls yet? In time, they will.
What is in the walls? Oh my god, I would have a sledgehammer and be opening every wall in that brand new, beautiful home.
I know, right? It goes on to say that they've learned a lot about their family over the next few weeks. They've spent a lot of time watching, including they know now the children's names and birth order.
Oh my god.
Yeah, this is quote, I am pleased to know your names now and the name of the young blood you have brought me. You certainly say their names often.
Oh my god.
They even go on to mention or point out a child's easel that had been set up on the enclosed porch and wrote, is she the artist in the family? And the rest of the letter says, 657 Boulevard is anxious for you to move in. It has been years and years since the young blood ruled the hallways of the house. Have you found all of the secrets it holds yet? Will the young blood play in the basement? Or are they... I know! I know! Or are they too afraid to go down there alone? I would be very afraid if I were them. It is far away from the rest of the house. If you were upstairs, you would never hear them scream.
No, 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 no.
Right?
No, sell the house, leave right now.
Right?
I hate this so much.
Freaking creepy. Okay. Will they sleep in the attic, or will you all sleep on the second floor? Who has the bedrooms facing the street? I'll know as soon as you move in. It will help me to know who is in which bedroom. Then I can plan better. All of the windows and doors in 657 Boulevard allow me to watch you and track you as you move through the house. Who am I? I am the Watcher, and I have been in control of 657 Boulevard for the better part of 2 decades now. The Woods family turned it over to you. It was their time to move on and kindly sold it when I asked them to. I pass by many times a day. 657 Boulevard is my job, my life, my obsession. And now you are too, Broadus family. Welcome to the product of your greed. Greed is what brought you the past 3 families to 657 Boulevard, and now it has brought you to me. Have a happy moving in day. You know I will be watching.
Like, oh my god. Ah! No. Yeah. Oh. It's horrifying.
Absolutely horrifying. And so again, like, the Woodses are saying, like, I have no idea, like, you know, where this person is coming from. Like, nobody ever told us to sell the house. We're just, all of our children are grown up, so we're, you know, selling the house. So that's when Derek and Maria promptly stopped bringing their children to the house.
100%. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So meanwhile, the police are not having much luck identifying who might be sending these letters.
It could be it could be anyone.
Literally anyone. Yeah. Oh. They were pretty sure that it came from someone in the area because all of the mail was processed from that local, like, distribution center.
Okay.
And the first letter had arrived only a few days after the contractors had even showed up at the house. So it had to be someone local.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, the Woods had received their letter before even moving out or even listing their house. You know, there was never a sign in the yard. Mm-hmm. So it kind of has to be someone who is either in that area or, you know, in real estate or something.
Yeah, who's hearing about these things.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And plus, the easel that the letter mentioned was set up on an enclosed porch that was mostly covered by landscaping. So the only way it could have been seen was if someone was standing like directly behind the house or right next door. Like you couldn't see it from the street. Derek had started to suspect their immediate next door neighbors, the Langfords. Mm-hmm. So Peggy Langford was in her 90s. So she lives with several of her adult children in their 60s, one of whom, Michael, was known through the neighborhood as a, quote, Boo Radley character. So maybe some disabilities, okay. You know, some developmental delays. And the family had lived in the home since the 60s.
Okay. So that kind of fits. Mm-hmm. Like it's an older person, mm-hmm. been there a long time and is in really close proximity to be able to see everything.
Yes.
Makes sense. I understand that suspicion.
Absolutely. And when Derek shared his suspicions with Detective Lugo, Lugo brought Michael in for questioning. Michael denied, you know, knowing anything about the letters, but Detective Lugo thought that the way he spoke seemed to match several of the things in the letters. Hmm. And Lugo is quoted as saying, this isn't CSI Westfield. When the wife is dead, it's the husband. like, essentially saying, like, yes, it's the neighbor. Of course it is. But there is really no hard evidence. And without a confession, there wasn't anything that they could do.
And what are you even, like, what do you charge someone with?
Right? I mean, because they haven't technically threatened yet. It's just creepy.
It's just super creepy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if they were actually caught in the act of, like, spying on the house, I guess, maybe. But then that's just trespassing.
Yeah, and that's assuming that they're, like, on their property.
Right. Like, they could just be, yeah, yeah. So, I don't know. It's just a bad situation.
It's the worst. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And so, Derek's, you know, pretty angry at this point. He says, quote, this is someone who's threatening my kids, and the police are saying probably nothing's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Probably isn't good enough for me. Mm-hmm. Understandable. It's your kids.
Yeah.
And then a few weeks later, after halting most of the construction and not bringing their children to the home, they receive a third letter. This one just starts by saying, where have you gone to? 657 Boulevard misses you. And I can get into the rest of that in a little bit. But, you know, at this point, the Broaddus's are ready to do their own investigation, right? Just, mm-hmm. I mean, they're one of us. mm-hmm. Derek set up webcams around the property.
Oh, thank you, Derek.
Finally, right? And he even spent some nights hiding in the home with lights off, hoping to, like, catch someone.
Ooh, yeah, smart.
Yeah. He had a map of the area in which he had listed when each neighbor had moved into their home, which ones were within sight and hearing distance. So he's like going like full on murder board CSI. Like, I love it.
Yes.
He also decided to turn into several experts for some help. Mm-hmm. The family hired a private investigator who staked out the neighborhood. He also researched the Langfords, but didn't really find anything of note. Like, there was no criminal records or anything like that. And Derek even contacted a former FBI agent who he had met at the PTO. And this former FBI agent happens to be the inspiration for Clarice Starling in The Silence of the Lambs.
No way!
Yes, here she is. Her name is Patricia Kirby. She's a forensic psychologist, a former FBI profiler, and the inspiration for Clarice Starling.
I love her.
Yes.
If there's anyone that can figure this out, it's got to be Patricia Kirby, right?
Right. Yeah. So he asks her for her advice and her help, and then also turns to another former FBI agent named Robert Lenihan. And he asked Robert to conduct a threat assessment, like basically saying, like, these are these letters. Is something physical actually going to come from this?
Right.
Lenihan was able to also like assess the handwriting of the letters and to determine that it was probably an older writer.
Okay.
Based on, you know, the shakiness of the script, and also that the envelope was addressed to M-M Broaddus, mm-hmm. which is a very kind of old-fashioned way of addressing envelopes. And the letters, even though they're kind of creepy and unhinged, they lack any profanity, even though they're quite angry, right? So it's probably someone who is, you know, older, someone who's more educated. And Lenihan says it's probably a less macho writer.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
God, that's so fascinating how they can just pull all of that out.
Yeah. Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. So in that third letter, this is just pointing out some of the anger that this letter writer is apparently expressing. They said, quote, "Are you one of those Hoboken transplants who are ruining Westfield?" The letter also talks about extensive renovations to the home and how much the watcher hated them, though they were like really modest renovations, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I have some pictures of listing photos. Oh, no, there's Robert Leonard. No, no, you're not supposed to see him yet. Sorry.
It didn't come up. I didn't see it.
Okay. All right. Never mind. I have some pictures later. I'll show you house. Later. So this third letter continues to say, oh, my gosh. "The house is crying from all the pain it is going through. You have changed it and made it so fancy. You are stealing its history. It cries for the past and what used to be in the time when I roamed its halls. The 1960s were a good time for 656 Boulevard. The house was full of life and young blood. Then it got old, and so did my father. But he kept watching until the day he died. And now I watch and wait for the day when the young blood will be mine again."
Mmm.
Bleh.
Mm-mm. Also, like, a weird obsession with, like, the architecture of this house.
Yes. Yeah. They're very interested in maintaining its historical detail. Because of the anger at, you know, changing the house, and because both the FBI agent and the detective suspected the neighbor Michael of writing the letters,
mm-hmm.
they devised a plan to send a letter to the Langford home advising them that the Broadduses would be tearing down the entire house. Like, just, like, hoping to, like, make a reaction or a response out of
so
them.
So smart.
Right?
Yes.
But none came.
Ah! So,
I know. And with no other leads and, you know, a determination from the FBI agent Lenihan that he did not think that there was a real physical threat, the Broadduses decided that they were just going to finish the renovations. They added a new alarm system. But they're still having, like, serious reservations about moving in mm-hmm. the meantime, right? Of mm-hmm. course. This is, like, continuing from the third letter. It says, 656 Boulevard is turning on me. It is coming after me. I don't understand why. What spell did you cast on it? It used to be my friend, and now it is my enemy. I am in charge of 657 Boulevard. It is not in charge of me. I will fend off its bad things and wait for it to become good again. It will not punish me. I will rise again. I will be patient and wait for this to pass and for you to bring the young blood back to me. 657 Boulevard needs young blood. It needs you. Come back. Let the young blood play again like I once did. Let the young blood sleep in 657. Stop changing it and let it alone.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is getting really weird and almost
really,
like,
weird.
I don't know. Parts of it are less creepy than, like, the first ones. Like, it seems like they're focusing on, like, really kind of strange things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when I read all of the letters in succession, which was really hard because I had to, like, piece it together from lots of different sources. So I'm not 100% sure on, like, the fluidity of, like, the three letters
okay.
of what comes to what. But, like, it seems like in the beginning they were super, super creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe I can scare them enough to get out of this house.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they realized that wasn't happening, they just started focusing on all of the renovations and the changes mm-hmm. to the home. So yeah. I don't know. Maybe it was someone who just really wanted this house.
No, that's an interesting strategy.
Right? Yeah. Boy. So the investigation continued, but was only turning up more questions than answers. The detective was still convinced that Michael was the culprit. But it, you know, it would have had to been awfully risky to keep sending letters after the police and an FBI agent are on to you. Like,
right.
That's pretty risky. Plus, the private investigator that the Broaddus's had hired had found that there were two sex offenders living within a few blocks of the home. And during renovations, one of the house painters noticed that the couple who lived behind the Broaddus's had their lawn chairs like right on the fence property facing the Broaddus's house and not their own house.
Fuck.
Yeah. And he said that he had seen one of the owners of that house like sitting in the lawn chair just watching the house. So
weird.
This is a weird neighborhood. Like, what is happening?
Yeah, everything about this is just would make me want to leave.
Yes. Yeah. So Derek is like trying everything to figure out what's going on here. He's hired these, you know, private investigators, FBI agents, all of this. And he next turns to, this is my favorite, because it's a very weird callback to my Woodstock episode. He hired a forensic linguist named Robert Leonard, who was a former member of the band Sha-da-da.
No way.
Yes, he's like this forensic linguist. He's a professor now.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that crazy?
Oh, I love it. I love it.
So he hired him to kind of like scour local forums for language patterns mm-hmm. that resembled the watcher's notes. Nothing turned up. So meanwhile, the Broaddus's had sold their old home, and so now they're like, well, we don't want to move into the new home because of all this craziness mm-hmm. going on. So they had to move in with Maria's parents. Maria was having nightmares. Derek was just like obsessed with this and trying to find out who did it. He's also mm-hmm. exhausted, financially drained. And they had only told a handful of friends about the letters. So when others like asked why they weren't moving into their new house, they just said legal issues, which then mm-hmm. just made everyone think that they were getting a divorce.
Yeah.
So it's like all of this stuff is compounding. Derek says that he was, quote, a depressed wreck. Maria's doctor even diagnosed her with PTSD.
Oh my gosh.
And said that she needed to get rid of this house. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not good. So according to Reeves Wideman, who wrote the original big article in The Cut, they said, quote, by the end of 2014, the investigation had stalled. The watcher had left no digital trail, no fingerprints, and no way to place someone at the scene of the crime that could have been hatched from pretty much any mailbox in northern New Jersey. The letters could be read closely for possible clues or dismissed as the nonsensical ramblings of a sociopath. Mm-hmm. Like, it could, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Like, that's what I was thinking. It, like, it's either very calculated or it's just kind of like word salad that seems like someone typed in some keywords like into an AI generator.
Seriously.
Like renovation, blood, scary.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it seemed that everyone had run out of options. And so as a final resort, Derek showed the letters to his priest who performed a home blessing.
Okay, like, why not?
I mean, they are literally trying everything.
Yeah.
But of course, that's, you know, not enough. And just 6 months after purchasing the home, the Broaddus family decided to sell.
Fair. I would do the same
yes.
thing.
Yeah. So I think here is the inside of the home at its in the listing photos.
Wow. It's
so, I mean, beautiful. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, there's nothing super extravagant about like the renovations that they did, right? It's like just a very, nothing looks out of place or weird.
Yeah.
It still has, you know, some historical charm, especially there's like beamed ceilings and, you know, all of the crown molding and stuff is still in place. Like,
yeah, it's not like they went in and ripped it all out and like put up shiplap.
Right. Exactly. Oh, God, it was 2014.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So many things could have gone wrong here.
Yeah, they kept it very classy. It still looks upscale. Like, I don't understand what this person was so worried about. Okay. Mm-hmm. They listed the home for slightly over what they paid for it at first because of all the renovations that they did. But, you know, gossip had started to spread about why the house had sat empty for so long.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the Broaddus family decided that they wanted to send a partial disclosure about the letters to any interested buyers.
Wow.
And that they would show the letters in full to anyone who accepted or anyone whose offer they accepted. So they, you know, they're trying to do their due diligence. They're mm-hmm. like being as upfront as possible. Even the realtor told them that they were just being way too forthcoming. Like, there was no need to disclose any of this information. Mm-hmm. Lawfully, they didn't have to do it.
Right. Most places, like, you don't even have to disclose, like, when something horrific happens there.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, unless someone asks about it or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a bunch of different. Yeah. Ugh. But they were like, you know, they knew what they experienced and they didn't want it to potentially happen to somebody else or to have someone buy the house without knowing that this was a possibility. And in fact, they were so sure that this was information that the new owners needed to know. They kind of began thinking about the previous owners before them who had also received at least one letter from the watcher. Mm-hmm. And had dismissed it as just being odd and not threatening. But they thought that the name, the Watcher alone, should have kind of thrown up some red flags.
Right. That would not be something you just looked at and were like, nah, no big deal.
Yeah. So in 2015, with their house still on the market, the Broaddus family filed a suit against the Woods family for not disclosing to them the letter that they had received from the Watcher before mm-hmm. the sale. Their goal was to reach a quiet settlement since the kids still did not know about the letter or the letters, and they didn't want anything to leak to the press.
Mm-hmm.
But the judge threw out the case, citing that there was no lawful reason that they had to disclose that information. And because of this lawsuit, a local reporter for the Today Show found the dispute and snippets of the letters, and the story went viral.
Oh.
So now it's all out and they have not sold this house yet.
Mm.
Yeah. There were like news vans camped out front. One local reporter set up a lawn chair and just like stayed in front of the house.
Oh my God.
Yeah. The Broadduses received over 300 inquiries from the media. But after consulting with a crisis management expert, they opted to keep quiet in order to save their children extra attention. And the family took off to go stay at a friend's beach house until things hopefully died down.
It's so awful because, like, not only is this totally preventing them from being able to sell this home that they need to get rid of, but now mm-hmm. there's all these extra people around. So, like, how the hell are they ever going to figure out who's the one sending these letters?
Exactly. Yes. It's awful. Mm. I feel so bad for this family.
Yes.
But, you know, the internet people began desperately trying to solve this case for themselves once they learned about it. People were suggesting, you know, ground penetrating radar to see what was really behind the walls, though nothing was ever found during renovations. Like, not that they tore down all the walls, but like nothing weird was ever found in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Reddit users began an extensive watch of Google Maps, like marking cars that were not there on the like previous version. And oh my gosh, yeah,
I love it.
They were on it. And they had a whole slew of suspects, right, ranging from like guerrilla marketing for a horror film, or like possibly a scorned mistress. Maybe it was a failed realtor. I think someone even said that it was a local high school student's creative writing project. And they kind of go into all of these theories in the Netflix show as well. Mm-hmm. My favorite internet theory, though, was just, quote, mall goths having fun.
Yes.
Like, amazing.
Classic yeah. mall goth behavior.
Mall goths. Yeah. So
the idea that teens would be this focused on, like, how dare you destroy the historical yes. charm.
Yeah. Yeah. That was another theory. There was like, maybe it was like a preservation society who were really upset that they were doing these renovations to this house. But like, it's not like they tore it down.
Right.
Like, yeah.
There's so many better ways you could yeah. go about getting this message to them.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, but locally, Westfield residents were like shocked. Because most of the neighbors, you know, were wondering how good could this police investigation have been since the police never talked to any of them.
Oh.
They did not know that this was happening, which, like, in the beginning, the detectives told them not to talk about the letters to their neighbors.
Right.
But then they never questioned them.
Yeah. Someone could easily be like, oh, yeah, Larry down the street is freaking always, like, standing in front of that house.
Yes, you know? Like, exactly. Exactly. So they were like, we did not know anything about this. This is awful. And since the case now had, like, national attention, a more veteran detective of the police department named Baron Chambly, I don't know, decided. Chambly? Yes, his first name is Baron, though, so.
Ooh, okay.
He decides that he's gonna now lead this investigation because it's still open. There's, you know, no new leads, nothing. So he's gonna lead this investigation. And he says, quote, the Broaddus's are victims and I don't think that they got the support they needed. Mm. Fair.
Mm-hmm.
So he was very concerned with like the seemingly singular focus on Michael Langford. Because once you start to talk to the neighborhood residents, you learn that Michael had actually been diagnosed with schizophrenia as a young man. And though he did do kind of strange things like, you know, walk through people's backyards, look through windows, most neighbors thought of him as completely harmless. He would often like bring people their newspapers from their, you know, their yard. And he was just, you know, he wasn't threatening in any way. So Chambliss was like, why were they so convinced that it was him?
Right.
And they just stopped looking at anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Chambliss also had some DNA ran on the envelope, like when you lick the envelope.
Oh, yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, why hadn't they done that before?
Right.
I guess because and they, no crime had been committed, so they can't yeah. spend the money.
Yeah. And they found that the DNA actually belonged to a woman.
Ooh.
But they could not find a match in their system. So a few leads kind of popped up, including, like, there was one woman who parked outside of the house late at night. And when the police questioned her, because they had been, like, scoping out the house, mm-hmm. she said her boyfriend lived a couple streets down. But that the boyfriend was, like, really weird. He was into these weird video games. And in one of the video games, he called himself the Watcher. So they're like, this is really strange. But it was all circumstantial. And so they could not make them come in to question them.
Okay.
So a couple of weird little leads like that popped mm-hmm. up. But nothing concrete was ever found. And then when the media attention started dying down, like, Chambliss dropped the case. Mm. But the neighbors didn't, now that they knew about it. Several of them got together to form their own investigation, and they came up with their own theory.
Ooh.
they thought that the Broaddus's were sending the letters to themselves.
Wait, what?
Mm-hmm. So their theory was that the Broaddus's had developed this plan to back out of the sale after either experiencing buyer's remorse or realizing that they could not afford the house. Mm. Their previous home had only cost $330,000.
Whoa.
Whoa. And this one was $1.3 million.
Okay. Maybe, like, they made really smart financial decisions.
And that's the thing. Like, Derek had, you know, he grew up in working class and he, you know, moved up and to be like a partner in one of these huge insurance firms in mm-hmm. Manhattan. So, like, he was making really good money. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I can't really see a big enough reason that they would do that to get out of the sale. Like, I feel like there's other ways they could have done that.
And that, like, if that was what they were doing, it seems like the letters would have been a lot different than what they were. Like,
with more physical threats and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Or, like, implying that this had been going on for longer or, you know, like, something yeah. to actually get them out of it.
Yep. Mm. Yeah. But unfortunately, the Westfield Leader, which was the local newspaper, published these theories. Oh. And the Broaddus family was, you know, shocked by these accusations. Derek kind of thought that they were simply just trying to salvage, like, the reputation of their community. Mm. He said, quote, here, there's a natural tendency to say, I've lived here for 35 years. Nothing's happened to me. Mm-hmm. What happened to my family is an affront to their contention that they're safe mm-hmm. and that there's no such thing as mental illness in their community. People don't want to believe this could happen to Westfield. So that's his theory, which is very gracious of him, I think.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense. You know, if mm-hmm. if they believe that the Broadduses did this, then when the Broadduses are gone, the threat is gone. And, like, right. they don't have to be afraid of anything.
Yep, absolutely. But Maria, she had grown up in this area. She's from Westfield. And she remembered her mother always warning her, you know, not to have a false sense of security because bad things can happen anywhere, even in Westfield. Mm-hmm. And Westfield kind of has its history of some pretty macabre things happening. Mm. So good macabre. Westfield is the home of or was the home of Charles Adams, who is the cartoonist who created the Adams family.
Ooh, love that.
Love it. In fact, every year they have, like, Adams Fest, which is really cool.
So is the house there? Because wasn't he inspired by, like, an actual house?
He was inspired, apparently, by a lot of the different Victorian houses in okay. Westfield. And I think I found a quote from someone who runs, like, the Adams Museum. Mm-hmm. And they said, like, the Adams family house in the cartoon is never the same. Hmm. So it's always kind of drawn a little bit different, which mm-hmm. is pretty interesting. I yeah. never knew that. And so he was kind of just inspired by the whole neighborhood. So that's good creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Bad creepy is a man named John List who lived in the neighborhood.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. John List, you know, who murdered most of his family before mm-hmm. disappearing for 18 years. Yeah, that John List. Mm-hmm. If you don't know the story of John List, I am going to be recording the story of John List, a little truncated version of it for our patrons. So
ooh,
if you're nice. Interested. Yeah, so that happened in Westfield. and so that house where the murders took place burned down. But the property was auctioned off. Mm-hmm. And Kurt Bauer, who was the publisher of the local paper, won the property for $36,000. And then in the 90s, his brother was shot by his estranged wife inside the newspaper office. So, like, there's a lot of bad stuff, yeah. like high profile, weird stuff that has happened in Westfield. So them claiming that it's this perfect little community. It's mm-hmm. not.
No, bad stuff happens everywhere.
Everywhere. Yes. Yeah. So now the Broaddus family was kind of cast out of both their house and now their community because people are now thinking that they're the ones doing this. Derek was just really insistent that they leave. But Maria persisted on keeping her children in Westfield because she really did have a really good childhood growing up and she loved the community and she wanted to stay a part of it. Mm-hmm. So 2 years after the first letter arrived, they borrowed money from family to purchase another home in Westfield. Mm. And they tried to desperately sell 657 Boulevard. But every interested party read the letters and backed out. Of course. I mean, yeah. So
it's surprising, though, that like that no one I mean, this house didn't even make it onto the market.
Yeah.
Last time. I can't believe that no one like not an investor, not anyone. Wow.
Yes. Yeah. So the Broaddus is after 6 months of renovations, you know, they decided they were going to sell. They sold their previous house, so they had to live in with Maria's mother. It's now 2 years later, so they've been living with the in-laws for 2 years. Finally, they borrow money from family and so they can purchase their own home.
Making house payments on a $1.3 million house that they're not even living in.
It's like a $5,600 mortgage a month.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So they're really trying to sell this house. Nobody is buying. So the real estate lawyer proposed that they sell to a developer who could tear down the property and turn it into like two separate homes to make money. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's their new plan. So they take that to the planning board, the zoning board or whatever. But it's full of all of these neighborhood people who don't like them. And so their request is denied. But there was a family with older children and two very large dogs that agreed to rent the house.
Okay.
The Broadduses put a clause in the lease saying that if they ever received a letter, they could back out of the lease with no questions asked. Mm. And just 2 weeks after moving in, they receive a letter. It was dated on February 13th, which was actually the day the Broaddus family had given their depositions in their case against the Woodses.
Oh, wow.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
It's a little different, but it says, quote, "Violent winds and bitter cold to the vile and spiteful Derek and his wench of a wife, Maria."
Whoa.
Yeah. Yes.
Wench.
Yes. "You wonder who the watcher is? Turn around, idiots. Maybe you even spoke to me, one of the so-called neighbors who has no idea who the watcher could be. Or maybe you do know and are too scared to tell anyone. Good move. I walked by the news trucks when they took over my neighborhood."
Ooh.
"And mocked me. I watched as you watched from the dark house in an attempt to find me. Telescopes and binoculars are wonderful inventions. 657 Boulevard survived your attempted assault and stood strong with its army of supporters barricading its gates. My soldiers of the Boulevard followed my orders to a T. They carried out their mission and saved the soul of 657 Boulevard with my orders. All hail the Watcher."
What the hell?
Yes. The letter also, like, this is the most threatening the letter has been, any of the letters have been. It kind of hints at revenge and that it could come at any time. Mm. It says, quote, "Maybe a car accident, maybe a fire, maybe something as simple as a mild illness that never seems to go away, but makes you feel sick day after day after day after day after day after day. Maybe the mysterious death of a pet, loved ones suddenly die. Planes and cars and bicycles crash, bones break." Like, this is, he's unhinged now.
Yeah, that's scary.
Yes. This letter, like all the others, was given to the police, but nothing came of it. And surprisingly, the family that was moving in there, they were still fine staying. I don't know. They continued to rent out the home. And though their fear, you know, kind of diminished over time, it never went away. It was always there. They were always scared. Mm-hmm. According to Weidman, who wrote that article, who and also interviewed the Broaddus family kind of extensively in 2018, Weidman learned of some final letters that had been delivered not to the Broaddus family, but to those in the neighborhood that had been kind of most vocal in their accusations of the Broaddus family. These letters were addressed to friends of the Broaddus family. Weidman doesn't say what was in those letters, but mentions that they were anonymous and were similar in tone, at least in resentment, to the Watcher letters. What? And when Weidman met with Derek, he admitted to sending those.
Oh, Derek.
Yeah, he said he obviously regrets sending them. He didn't even tell his wife he was going to do it. He was just so mad that his family was going through this, and then they were now being accused of doing it. But then he did it. I don't know. Okay, yeah. Yeah, so Weidman writes, quote, "The Watcher had been obsessed with 657 Boulevard, and Derek in turn had become obsessed with the Watcher and everything the letters had set in motion. Derek said, it's like cancer. We think about it every day." In July of 2019, the house at 657 Boulevard finally sold for $959,000, which is like $400,000 less than they originally paid for it.
Oh, that's painful.
Yeah, Derek's monthly mortgage had been $5,500 a month in a house that he never lived in.
That's awful.
For 5 years, yeah. The Watcher case remains unsolved to this day.
No!
Yes. Sorry. I'm sorry.
Oh, I hate that.
Yeah. As for the town, they seem to remain divided. One employee from the prosecutor's office named Gagliardi relayed an event that happened in 2019, so like right after the house had sold, that he said made him furious. So he worked for the prosecutor's office, who is now in charge of the case. The police department closed it, and then the prosecutor's office picked it up. Mm-hmm. He was sorting through, like, the last round of DNA testing on the letters when the board announced that they would be giving awards for Westfield's annual holiday gingerbread house contest. And first place in the iconic building category was a gingerbread version of 657 Boulevard, complete with letters from the Watcher on the front porch. There's like, how classless can you be? Like, that's
horrible.
The board made this the first prize. Like,
My god,
gross.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a really cute gingerbread house, but like,
god, I hate it.
Bad taste. Yeah, it's terrible. Gagliardi said, quote, "You can't say we're taking this seriously as a community, then have something like this in a public forum. I'm not talking as the chief of detectives. I'm talking as a general fucking human being."
Woo! Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Broaddus family still lives in Westfield, tries to lead as quiet as a life as they can. And I would also just like to add that the current residents of 657 Boulevard have not received any letters. Everything has stopped, at least that they're disclosing. You know, they're saying nothing is happening, except after the Netflix show, there's tons of people who are showing up at their house.
Oh, jeez.
So, yeah, they have to, like, put police line in front of their houses now. Like, it's just – it's really bad. So if you were thinking about going to look at the house, please don't. Like, a family lives there. They're just trying to live their lives. Leave them alone. Just, they had nothing to do with the Watcher.
Look at a picture online.
Seriously, it does. It's just the same. Yeah. Oh, so
that's such a bummer.
I know. But that is what I know about the Watcher.
Ooh, that was so good.
I'm so sorry. There's no, you know, real updates or anything. It's still just unsolved. Nobody knows what happened.
Wow, that is wild. That's wild. Yes! I have no idea what to think.
I know. Like, it had to be a neighbor. It had to be. Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
But it seems so targeted, like, at that specific family.
Yes. Yeah.
Someone did not like them.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Very, very strange. So I have some recommendations. Ugh. They were very hard to find because, like, besides the Netflix show, and there is actually another movie based on this, there's mm-hmm. really no books written about it.
Mm-hmm. There's such little evidence.
Yes. Yeah. There's very little. So I do have two, like, media recommendations. One is The Watcher, which is a Lifetime movie.
Okay.
Which the Broaddus's actually tried to sue for defamation because they changed so much of the story that even claiming that it was a true story was like defamation or something. Yeah. They didn't win, but just trying to financially recover from this as best they can, man. So the synopsis of this movie is, unaware of its terrible history, a young couple purchases their dream home, but it soon becomes clear that they may not be alone in the house, and that someone or something is determined to drive them out.
Ooh.
And then, of course, The Watcher on Netflix. Its synopsis is, the 7-episode series stars Naomi Watts and Bobby Cannavale as Nora and Dean Brannick, a couple who exhaust their savings to purchase their dream home in the suburbs. Soon after moving in, the Brannicks begin receiving mysterious letters from the Watcher, who promises to keep a constant eye on the home and its new residents. Mm. It was really good, but, you know, very fictionalized. In true, like, Ryan Murphy style, he sneaks in some, like, supernatural stuff into the show. Mm-hmm. Maybe. I don't know. You're always kind of guessing with his stuff. So it's good, but very different.
Ooh.
Yeah. Okay, so for books, I could not find any books, like, relating to this case. So the route that I took was, family moves into a new house and bad things happen. Like, those are my recommendations for today. Yes. So they're all scary or thrillers. That's, you know, if that's not your jam, I'm sorry, but that's all I got for you today.
Mm-hmm.
So the first is one of my very, very favorites. I love this book. It's called The Invited by Jennifer McMahon. And the synopsis reads, in a quest for a simpler life, Helen and Nate have abandoned the comforts of suburbia to take up residence on 44 acres of rural land, where they will begin the ultimate aspirational to-do list project, building the house of their dreams. When they discover that this beautiful property has a dark and violent past, Helen, a former history teacher, becomes consumed by the local legend of Hattie Breckenridge, a woman who lived and died there a century ago. With her passion for artifacts, Helen finds special materials to incorporate into the house: a beam from an old schoolroom, bricks from a mill, a mantle from a farmhouse, objects that draw her deeper into the story of Hattie and her descendants. 3 generations of Breckenridge women, each of whom died suspiciously. As the building project progresses, the house will become a place of menace and unfinished business, a new home now haunted that beckons its owners and their neighbors toward unimaginable danger. So they essentially build a haunted house, which is very cool.
Love that.
Yes. It's one of my favorites, and I included it with this because while they're building their home, they're staying on a trailer in the property, and they get some not so friendly gifts from their neighbors. Mm. So kind of fits in with the theme.
Mm-hmm.
The next book is Good Neighbors by Sarah Langan. I have not read this one. The synopsis is, welcome to Maple Street, a picture-perfect slice of suburban Long Island, is residents bound by their children, their work, and their illusion of safety in a rapidly changing world. Arlo Wild, a gruff has-been rock star who's got nothing to show for his fame but track marks, is always two steps behind the other dads. His wife, beautiful ex-pageant Queen Gertie, feels socially ostracized and adrift. Spunky preteen Julie curses like a sailor, and her kid brother Larry is called Robot Boy by the kids on the block. Their next-door neighbor and Maple Street's queen bee, Ray Schroeder, a lonely community college professor repressing her own dark past, welcomes Gertie and family into the fold. Then, during one spritzer-fueled summer evening, the new best friends share too much too soon. As tensions mount, a sinkhole opens in a nearby park and Ray's daughter, Shelly, falls inside.
Oh my god!
The search for Shelly brings a shocking accusation against the Wilds that spins out of control. Suddenly, it is one mom's word against the others in a court of public opinion that can end only in blood. So, the next is The Hollow Places by T. Kingfisher. And the synopsis is, pray they are hungry. Kara finds these words in the mysterious bunker that she's discovered behind a hole in the wall of her uncle's house.
Ooh, she opened the wall.
She opened the wall. Freshly divorced and living back at home, Kara now becomes obsessed with these cryptic words and starts exploring the peculiar bunker, only to discover that it holds portals to countless alternate realities. But these places are haunted by creatures that seem to hear thoughts, and the more you fear them, the stronger they become. That one's a little out there, but, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. there's something behind the wall, so. And then last, of course, I couldn't leave off the book with the most infamously bad neighbors.
Yes.
Rosemary's Baby by Ira Levin. Rosemary Woodhouse and her struggling actor husband Guy move into the Bramford, an old New York City apartment building with an ominous reputation and only elderly residents. Neighbors Roman and Minnie Castavet soon come nosing around to welcome them, and despite Rosemary's reservations about their eccentricity and the weird noises she keeps hearing, her husband starts spending time with them. Shortly after Guy lands a plum Broadway role, Rosemary becomes pregnant, and the Castavets start taking a special interest in her welfare. As the sickened Rosemary becomes increasingly isolated, she begins to suspect that the Cassavetes' circle is not what it seems.
Yes. Classic.
Yeah.
So good.
Yay. So that's The Watcher.
Mm. Wow. Wow. Yeah. I have so many feelings.
I know.
So many feelings.
Yeah. And I almost hate doing ones that are unsolved, but this one was just too interesting, so.
Mm-hmm.
Oy.
Yeah. So, I'm really gonna rethink the window situation in my house.
Yeah, for sure.
Oy. Oh my god. That's so creepy.
Yes. So, did you find a review for us to share this week?
Mm, yeah, I did.
Okay, good.
Okay, it's real short.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but The Book of Mice and Men destroyed me when I had to read it for school.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate this one-star review from someone named Laura. It says, I don't like depressing writing. If I want to be depressed, I'll just think, not read.
Same girl, man.
Which I totally identify with, because for some reason, since having a child, something has like changed in my brain, and I have a really, really hard time consuming anything that is like has a sad ending.
Yes. Correct. Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
I can't do it.
Yes. Well, mine is another classic.
Okay.
So this is a Goodreads review from someone named Matt, who has shelved this title on his Goodreads bookshelves called Overrated, Sucked, School Forced Me to Read This. So this is a very, very short review of The Old Man and the Sea by Ernest Hemingway.
Okay.
And it just says, worst book ever. just throw the fucking fish back in. Fuck. Which, all right.
Fair. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right.
Wow. That was so good. That was such a good episode and so disturbing.
Good out. Lock your doors, y'all.
Oh my god. My house has all the windows.
Yeah, yeah, we don't have like blinds or curtains on our downstairs, so
we do, but we have curtains, but they're literally never closed because we look out at the water, so
yeah.
We always want them open, but now I will just whatever. We can sell the house, we can move somewhere that looks at a brick wall. I don't care.
Oh, goodness. Oh,
wow. Well,
I just, yeah, yeah. Happy New Year!
Sleep well.
No.
I don't want to check my mail ever again either.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for that, Haley.
You're welcome.
I can always count on you.
It's my purpose in life.
All right. Well.
All right.
Thanks for listening.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Reference Desk.
If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
If you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/thereferencedesk.
And if you're interested in purchasing any of the books we discussed today, visit our bookshop storefront at bookshop.org/thereferencedeskpod.
You can find us on Instagram at thereferencedeskpod, visit our website at thereferencedeskpod.com, or drop us an email at referencedeskpod@gmail.com.
This episode was written and produced by us.
Our music is Say Salavi by Eric Harper, and our cover art for the show is by Maria Amaya.
Until next week, we'll see you in the stacks.